This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
8:47 in the morning. Good morning. It's time to cast our eyes down south to the Indonesian subcontinent. We've got just over a month to go before the presidential elections over there. President Joko Widodo, otherwise known as Jokowi, appears to be widening his lead over his closest contender, retired general Prabowo Subianto.
So that's right. The several opinion polls last week showed that Widodo had a significant advantage over his rival, boasted by a stable economic and political security situation. However, while Prabowo may be falling short, his running mate businessman Sandiaga Uno has been generating a buzz on the campaign trail. So joining us on the line is Anwita Basu, the lead Southeast Asia analyst with the Economist Intelligence Unit, for her analysis. Thank you for joining us. What should we note from yesterday's vice presidential debate? Who do you think came out on top?
I think yesterday's debate was quite interesting because most observers would have expected Sandi Uno to sort of emerge victorious. But Maruf Amin was able to hold his own, despite the fact that, you know, Sandi Uno remained the more enigmatic, the more sort of convincing speaker, particularly towards the end. It would have seemed that they were both sort of stood at equal levels, despite the fact that their personalities are in stark contrast to each other.
Yeah. So, Anwita, Prabowo's running mate Sandiaga Uno is seen as appealing to young voters. Is he a potential game changer for Prabowo, who is, of course, a retired general?
Yes, I think what's most interesting this time around is the fact that one of the more interesting factors is that Prabowo has been trying to reposition himself. So he has changed his tactic from last time, where he was a fairly obvious strongman, whereas now he's sort of tempered down that sort of military gusto that he had. Obviously, bringing in Sandiaga Uno was another way of him sort of tempering his personality. If you remember from the beginning of the campaign, he definitely took sort of a backseat towards in the campaign, whereas he made Sandi Uno sort of run the campaign, do the groundwork and sort of meet the provinces and so on. So I think this time around Subianto's sort of tactic is more towards sort of leading from behind because of Sandiaga Uno. The other reason why he chose Sandiaga Uno is because of funding. Mr. Uno is quite a rich man. He's the biggest backer of the Prabowo Sandi campaign. So that's an important factor as well.
Anwita, Jokowi's popularity in recent years has really been resting on his populist credentials. But according to some of the news developments out of Indonesia, Prabowo seems to be getting quite a good head of steam. To what extent is the economy, or the lack thereof, in terms of growth, and Jokowi's occasionally hardline stance towards opposition politicians to blame for this?
Yes, I think Jokowi is an interesting character. Over the past 5 years or four and a half, in his first term, he's emerged as a fairly strong politician, which I know sounds a bit of an obvious statement, but when he was voted in, he wasn't seen as a traditional politician, whereas he has had to sort of navigate the complicated political terrain that Indonesian national politics offers. Equally, he has realized that actually, as president, he has less leverage or power to implement policy at the very ground level, unlike his position as mayor of Solo or even governor of Jakarta. So a lot of the a lot of the reforms that he did plan or he did promise at the beginning of the of his term haven't sort of percolated down, partly because it's quite difficult to do that at the national level. Jokowi, from his economic standpoint, I would say it's a mixed bag. I think generally macroeconomic stability has been has been fairly strong under Jokowi, and that's not entirely because of his policies, but it's partly because he's chosen to, you know, furnish the cabinet with technocrats who control the economy. And partly because of oil prices being quite mild, that's kind of allowed the country to sort of shore up the capital, the current account deficit, and so on. So it's definitely, it can't all be attributed to Jokowi. He has not been able to deliver very strong economic growth. For instance, employment remains a problem. Inequality at the very sort of among various provinces. It remains high, although Jokowi has focused a lot around regional reform and regional development, but it hasn't quite panned out the way he would have ideally liked it to.
Anwita, let's talk about Jokowi's running mate, Ma'ruf Amin. Now, some part of Indonesia is seeing greater tide of Islamic sentiment. Where does Ma'ruf Amin fall along those progressive conservative line?
I think Ma'ruf Amin, again, another interesting choice. It was partly because Jokowi got spooked out by what happened with Ahok in 2017 and sort of the real firebrand rise of groups like the FPI who are quite sort of who harbor extremist views. That's not what Jokowi is trying to create. He's trying to create a society of sort of conservative Islam, but not of you know, extremist Islam. Sort of moderate views, and that's definitely something that majority Indonesians would support. The other reason why Ma'ruf Amin was chosen was, interestingly enough, Jokowi. In fact, in the first presidential campaign that he had, he was considered to be a very anti-Muslim candidate because he backed a lot of minorities. Obviously, Ahok was a very close sort of friend and ally of Jokowi. So he was considered, and particularly by the Subianto campaign, he was touted as this anti-Muslim, although Jokowi is a devout Muslim and he's, you know, done the Hajj and you know, he's very respectful towards the majority community. The politics behind him has been very sort of, the image that is portrayed by the opposition is that he's quite anti-Muslim. So Ma'ruf Amin sort of allays those fears that, you know, Jokowi is going to take away from the Muslim identity of Indonesia.
All right, Anwita, thank you ever so much. That was Anwita Basu from the Economist Intelligence Unit, really commenting on the upcoming Indonesian president elections coming up in about a month's time. Now, from Indonesia, we switch our attention to Deutsche Bank. Now, we know from the news flow that Deutsche has begun merger talks with Commerzbank. It's been quite troublesome for both banks in the last few years. They've been seeing a whole bunch of cuts to their investment banking units, and of course, Germany itself is going through some travails of its own. Now, the discussions have really entered, I think, a deeper point, and we've really seen the fact that both sides have been trying to turn around their respective entities, but really to little avail.
Yeah, so both Deutsche Bank and Commerzbank have spent billions of dollars on restructuring efforts. They've both overhauled their management, attempted to cut costs, but ultimately they also seem to have failed to convince the German government that they can succeed alone. So this might mean a merger between these two banks might mean thousands of job cuts, but the German government has said that it won't stand in the way of any necessary job and cost cuts, and that is it is ready to support a deal. There are no details yet on how a potential merger may be structured, but I think it's worth noting that the German government owns about a 15% stake in Commerzbank.
Yeah, and really, if the government is behind such a move, then it's going to be, you know, it's pretty much baked in the pie that it's going to happen. Just a little bit of details in terms of a potential tie-up. The 259, they're both 149 years old, okay? And if they do get together, it will create Europe's fourth largest bank, assets of about 1.8 trillion euros. They would have a combined market value of about 25 billion euros. And it's not clear, as you say, Lynn, how the deal will be structured, but I think really very much there's going to be a lot of jobs that's going to be cut in the process, and if really the government is behind it, rather for but the that much larger national good, then it might yet happen. Okay, it is 8:58 in the morning. We're going to be coming back with the 9 o'clock news, and after that, the KLCI market movements. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.